Blind Nil Audio.
Greetings, Carl here. Today on 50 Fires, my guest is seventh generation cattle rancher Elizabeth Poet. In 2007, Elizabeth decided to move back to her family home on California's Central Coast near Santa Barbara and make the family business her own. She started Rancho San Julian Beef, a business selling her family's ranch-raised, grass-fed beef directly to chefs and consumers. Her meat quickly became popular with California cooks and local chefs and has been served at restaurants across California. Elizabeth is also the host and star of the cooking and lifestyle show Ranch to Table, one of the founding shows of the Magnolia Network, and the author of the blog The Ranch Table. She also hosts a number of ranch table events at her land throughout the year, cooking workshops and educational events, and intimate farm-to-table meals. We consider some pretty big questions. What is true wealth? Is it material, or is it more based on experiences with the people you love? What role does community play? How do we think about the heavy weight of legacy every day? The reality of questions like that is we often don't know the answers. And you're going to see Elizabeth and I stumble around a bit trying to find those answers. But one thing that was clear was the answer that seems to matter most to Elizabeth is that these questions are bigger than we are, and that's okay. I'm Carl Richards, an author, artist, and certified financial planner, and today we're talking about money with Elizabeth Poet. This is 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning. Elizabeth, how did they, I'm always curious how you got convinced to show up someplace and have a conversation about money with a random stranger.
I know, it's funny. I'm not going to lie. I was a little little nervous about the conversation.
Tell me about the nervousness. What were you nervous about?
Yeah, I mean, I think money is, it's a funny conversation. And for some reason, I don't know. It's just like one of those conversations that is different. I also think that as a rancher, I don't understand why anyone would want to talk to me about money. Because as ranchers, I mean, we put it all into our cows and the ranch, and, you know, it's definitely for the long haul. So, I mean, I guess we're investing in the longevity, but it is, I don't know if you necessarily put us with ranchers and investment bankers.
Yeah, well, I have exactly zero interest in talking to an investment banker. Okay. But my wife's grandfather is a cattle rancher in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he passed away a couple of years ago, but was a cattle rancher in Wyoming and has the Wyoming license plate beef. So, you know, that's
amazing.
That's OG rancher, right?
Yeah.
But I just remember whenever we'd go up there early in our marriage, there was this practicality that was so refreshing. I remember we were training once for a long bike race. It was from Logan, Utah to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And so we'd go on these 3 or 4 hour bike rides. And one time we went up to his ranch in Wyoming and we went on a ride from there and we came back and, you know, he had already been out, you know, in his 70s working on fences and had come back and had the boots off and was doing the morning, you know, sort of little breakfast coffee break. And we came in and he's like, "Where have you guys been?" Like, "We were on a bike ride." And he looked at his watch and he's like, "For how long?" He's like, "4 hours." And he puts the paper down, looks at me and says, "Boy, do you need something to do?" And I was like, "Apparently I do." apparently I do. But in that same weekend, I remember him having the paper open and he was in the financial, in the stock quote section. And I was like, I was kind of puzzled. At this point, I was working at a big investment firm. I was like, "What are you doing, Grandpa? Why are you looking at the?" And he's like, "I'm just trying to figure out how much I can sell my cows for." Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about just the, what have you learned just practically about the role of money when it comes to being a rancher?
I mean, one for sure is that you need something to do, you know, I could put you to work and you'll be real tired and strong by the end of the day. But then there's the relationship to money when raising cattle. It's you are looking at the market. That is totally true. To be when you sell your cattle, it's all about the market. I would say also it has so much to do with the environment and what sort of, you know, what kind of rains are we getting this year? And, you know, I always say when we talk about weather, it's not just a filler conversation. These are real, right. Like, how many inches did you get? Because I really want to know how many inches of rain did you get? These, because it really is the trajectory for your year. And how, you know, how much money are you going to spend on feed? If you didn't get a lot of rain, you're going to have to spend more money on in supplements and all the things that, what are you going to need to take care of your animals throughout the rest of the year? So I think that it's definitely something that we think about a lot. I used to, when I first came back to the ranch, I wrote a business plan to start my business, and I went to the bank and got a business loan and you know, really wanted to do it on my own in that way. And, you know, a couple of years in, we had a really bad drought. And I thought to myself, like, me looking up at the sky and like praying for rain is not necessarily the best business plan. Like, what is going on with ranchers? What are they thinking? Like, this is horrible. This is out of our control. And there is something there that is, you know, when you're in agriculture, you know, wherever you are in the world, when you're in agriculture, you're not always in control of how that year is going to go.
I'm so curious about that, just because I actually think that that is true even when you're not in agriculture, but the reality of it's so stark. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no, you can't pretend that, like, there's actually this real danger around money and like financial planning and investing and all those things that we end up really wanting to buy certainty because we so desperately want it. And there's plenty of people willing to sell us the promise of certainty, but it turns out certainty is a myth. And that's true in all of our lives, but I've never, there's a couple of places, some of the creative pursuits, and then anybody involved in agriculture based businesses, it's like so much a part of your reality. Like the rain, like when is the rain going to come? How have you dealt with, because I think you used the word horrible. Right, this is horrible. What were ranchers thinking? How have you dealt with that uncertainty?
Well, I mean, I've dealt with it. I think it's part of the reason why I love it, and part of the reason. I mean, I think for example, I love waking up every morning and having no clue how the day is going to go. I mean, even from cattle being out or, you know, my sheep going up the canyon and I'm going to have to now spend the rest of my day going up and getting them back. And I think that there's something though, that's very, I love that part of the work, but yeah, I think uncertainty.
Hey, it's Carl. I just want to put a fine point on this conversation about uncertainty and the things that we have control over. I love the idea. I mean, it's actually a little unmooring, to be honest, that Elizabeth used the words like, I love waking up in the morning and not knowing what my day is going to look like. But this brings up a really important lesson that I'm trying to learn. It's part of a very intentional practice on my part. There's so much in our financial lives that we don't have complete control over, right? And trying to get a little bit better about focusing on the things over which I have control and the things that matter. In fact, about 10 years ago, I started to realize that I would make these grand plans, sometimes even for the next day. And then I would show up and, like Elizabeth said, the sheep went up the canyon. Like, and I would be so frustrated because my day didn't look like the plan that I had built. I think we've all experienced this. One thing I did was I just changed my business plan. And it really just consists of three steps, right? Show up. Embrace the uncertainty of it all and ask what is to be done next. I guess it's four steps because the fourth one is repeat. And that's been super helpful for me because it got rid of all the frustration of reality. You know what I mean? Like there was no way to get rid of reality continuing to show up when the sheep go up the canyon and it changes my whole day. So I've found that instead of trying to fight uncertainty, instead of trying to find ways to buy certainty, it became much more helpful to become better at just surfing reality.
I think uncertainty is something that is a struggle, probably, as you said, I think it is a struggle for everyone. And because we like to be in control, we like to know what's going to happen. And I think I have just become, I think you just, it's just the way of life that we, how we live. We just know that we're not going to know. Which sounds bleak now that I say it out loud. But it also, I think there is this part of you that just knows that it's going to work. You know, there's just a part of me, I'm lucky enough to come from a long line of people who have done this. And I would say that it's just, you know, one of my favorite stories is the, I read it to my kids a lot when they were little, is the tortoise and the hare. And that feeling of you can just run, or you can just slowly, methodically do the work and it will work out in the end. And that's been hard for me, but it's been something that I kind of come back to a lot.
Yeah. What's your earliest memory of money?
You know, I think my earliest memory of money is I went to a kind of a makeshift farmer's market with my dad. We were selling burgers. My dad had just started this beef business a long time ago. And this is maybe the late 80s. And he was the first organic beef producer in California. And it was also during the time, it was like way before people were doing organic meats. This is like way before that. And and people were a little like the managers. I remember going into it feeling uncomfortable because they said that they weren't going to be eating meats. Like, oh, nobody will come and talk to us because we were selling meats and it was more of a vegetarian, maybe like, you know, maybe more of that sort of a farmer's market. And so my dad took me and he did burgers and I was the cash register gal. And it hardly a cash register. It was a box. It was literally a shoe box. And I remember there was the longest line of people coming to buy something that we had really grown and raised from scratch. And I think that really turned me into this. I think not only did it affect me by me being able to be part of something that I really love to be part of and be able to make money. Really, I mean, I remember the light. I remember it was a really beautiful, warm kind of fall day. I remember everything. And I remember I had like stacked all my, like the dollars and the $5 and the, you know, I did it. They were very organized. And I don't think my dad paid attention at all to like, it was more just to be there and get out a product that we were really proud of.
What do you make of that looking back on that experience?
I mean, I think about that experience a lot because I really do think it really kind of put me in, it opened my eyes. You know, I was about 9 years old. And so I was just old enough to kind of understand the work that it took to get the product there. But I got to see something that I think was really important for me was that I got to see the reaction of people enjoying the work. So I was able to, you know, people were just really, really excited about that connection. And I think I've always been a real dork for food and that love of food, but that connection. And I think I just loved it. I mean, I really like to be organized. I like numbers. I feel like sometimes it's a riddle to kind of figure it all out, you know, running a business. And, you know, my parents, when they first moved back to the ranch, the ranch has been in my family for a really long time. And, it's on my dad's side of the family, and my dad always wanted to move back here. But when they first moved back here, they really had no money, and they were really just starting from scratch. As a child, though, I never knew that. I wouldn't know. I didn't really see it.
Did you feel it, or is it only in hindsight that you even know that this was like a tough time for your parents financially?
I only realized it a couple of years ago when I was going through old pictures at a Christmas. I must have been 4 or 5, and they gave me, I got a cat from the pound. Like, to this day is like one of my favorite gifts ever. It's probably my love of animals and love of pounds. But it was only then really that I was like, gosh, Mom, where's all the gifts? She's like, we got nothing. we were just kind of, you know, making it work.
So you had that conversation. You asked your mom about it.
Yeah. My parents are always pretty open about it, but no, I never felt like I missed anything.
Yeah. Do you have a practice or a mantra or a story or something that you remind yourself of? Is it like that your dad's thing that it will just work out? Or how do you deal with it when you're feeling like, I don't know?
I walk a lot. I go on a lot of walks. I walk a lot of fence lines.
Yep.
I think this may sound corny, but I do feel that there's hope. And that hope is something that really to so much, and that things will work out. I mean, we have the ranch has been in my family for a really long time, and there people come and they're like, this place is gorgeous. This is beautiful. Oh my goodness. And it is, it's a beautiful spot. But, you know, I drive around, my dad, my husband, we drive around and we just see problems. We see all the things that we need to do to keep this place moving, vibrant, and alive. And it's a lot. And a lot of it has to do with money, you know, just needing to figure out how the ranch can, you know, sustainability is such a hot word, and sometimes it makes me crazy. But it's truly like, how are we going to keep this ranch going well into the future, well into the next generations? And it can be very daunting, because it's bigger than us. That sometimes, you know, there's my work, and we raise cattle, and then I have events, and we do all these things on the ranch to help supplement and to help make things work. But then we also have something that's even greater than us. It's about my children and their children's children. And that can be, it's a huge responsibility to figure it out. And, you know, my dad.
Hey, it's Carl. Did you hear that? One of the things I'm always listening for in these conversations is a deeper sense of why. I like to think of it as a statement of financial purpose. Because if I can be really clear about what's important to me about money, what money means to me, all the other decisions, they don't get easy, but they certainly get a lot easier. In fact, the only way I've found to say no consistently to poor financial decisions is to have a deeper yes. And I think what we just heard was Elizabeth's deeper yes, right? That this ranch isn't about her, right? It's been in the family for generations, and it's going to continue to be in the family for generations. It's my goal to make sure that happens. Well, if you're really clear about something like that in your life, these other decisions, again, they don't get easy, but they get much easier.
And, you know, my dad has always just been great about like, okay, we got to figure this out. We can do this. We could do this. You know, he started doing literally when he was trying to figure out how we were going to send me to a school that I wanted to go to. He was like, okay, we're going to put in a lavender field, and we're going to start harvesting lavender. And, you know, this is great. And we planted lavender, and we made this beautiful soap and blah, blah, blah. You just have to figure it out, and you have to have that hope and faith that that it's you're just gonna do it. You got to.
We'll be right back with more from 50 Fires.
Hey, it's Carl. You know what's hard for most of us? Talking money. That's what I'm talking about. Talking about money is hard for most of us, but there's somebody who it is not hard for. She's been doing it forever. Her name is Shauna Game. And if you've been enjoying the conversations I am having here at 50 Fires, I think you would love what Shauna's got going on at her podcast. The podcast is called Everyone's Talking Money. And just like 50 Fires, Shauna's goal with Everyone's Talking Money is to go beyond the spreadsheets and the calculators and the budgeting apps to talk about how our emotional relationship with money impacts our lives. With over 900 episodes, that's right, 900, there is an episode for any and every practical money question you have. Some of Shauna's recent episodes include retirement risks to avoid and credit card versus debit card. Which one should I use? You're going to love it. Subscribe to Everyone's Talking Money on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to 50 Fires. Can I have permission to ask sort of a clumsy question I'm not sure how to ask?
Thank goodness. I feel like I'm totally clumsy.
It felt like a safe place. There's this interesting thing that I want to talk to you about with the romanticized version of the ranch and the ranch life. And I think like where you're situated, like just like it's perfect, right? You know, near Santa Barbara and beautiful. And oh, it must be so. And then you have a TV show and you've written a book. And I'm curious about your like experience interacting, because you're also a very public person. I mean, you're out interacting with people. You're not just solitary on a ranch. How does that feel to you when you bump up against this like romanticized version of the ranch life?
I think it's, yeah. Well, it's twofold. Awkward, right? Yeah, I know. I mean, I laugh at the idea that it's romanticized. I think that's,
well, you know, like you're aware of this, aren't you?
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, good.
Oh yeah. Oh no, it looks like a walk in a beautiful park. No, it's could not be more perfect. And I also think, especially now, I mean, there's this whole world of like, there is this whole perfectness that can be definitely seen.
Yeah, the Instagram version of your life,
sure,
is pretty amazing. I mean, it looks like intergenerational wealth. It
right?
looks like sitting around the fire. Like it, the Instagram version of your life is so amazing.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Oh, that's so nice. you know, I think that there are beautiful parts of this life. That is totally true. I think there are beautiful parts. I don't think it has that much to do with money. I think, you know, I mean, we drive, I think also this whole world too, this hype around Yellowstone and, you know, people will connect that, you know, say, oh, like Yellowstone. And I'm like, well, I don't hurt anybody. And I also don't have a helicopter. And I also don't have really nice trucks. We drive really old, beat up trucks. And we're constantly trying to figure out how we're going to keep it going. Yeah, but there is a lot of truth to that. There are many beautiful parts. And I love being able to share those sort of moments, you know, that are really, really beautiful.
Why do you love to share that? And what is it that you're hoping that that will, because I'm really glad you do. And I have a sense of it, of what I get out of it, which I want to talk about. But what is it that you hope? Why do you love to share this?
Because I think, because the most beautiful parts for me are simple, like simpler times, simple. To me, I find that most beautiful. For example, we had a big work day the other afternoon and all of our neighbors came over, not all of them, but you know, a bunch of people came over and we decided that we were just going to eat on the back of the pickup truck. We had like our coolers and we had the food and we just had two pickup trucks and we parked them next to each other and just sat there or stood there and had food and chatted. And I took a picture because it's just to me, that is something that money could never buy.
Right.
It's just so simple. It's simple. It's people standing around talking, laughing, telling stories, eating food. And that to me is just, it's simplicity. It's simplicity. And that fills me.
Hey, it's me. This part of the conversation started with me saying, hey, could I ask you a clumsy question? And you can feel both Elizabeth and I trying to put ground beneath our feet because this is such an important conversation about money and meaning. Elizabeth and her family for generations have made a decision that they want to work this land, that it's going to stay a cattle ranch. And what I was trying to get at is this perception that I had about wealth and land. You know, I live in Utah. There's big ranches all around. And you often associate that because of what we've seen, something like Yellowstone on TV, about it all being about wealth and land. And what Elizabeth keeps pointing back to is, yeah, that may be true, right? Of course. Is the land valuable? Of course. But what she keeps pointing back to is the source of their wealth is in the work that they're doing, right? In the craft, in the soul, what they care about, and that the whole family is bought into that. And she says, we're really lucky because the whole family's bought into that. And I think that's just a beautiful thing to point to because the research is pretty clear. The things that will bring lasting value to our lives have very little to do with money. It's experiences with our friends. They're often the simplest experiences with the people that we love. And I think it's fascinating that Elizabeth, as she searched for answers to these questions, she kept coming back to that. It's the simple things, while at the same time acknowledging the privilege of being on a 14,000 acre ranch near Santa Barbara.
My goal has always been to figure out how to live a life that I want to, being able to live a life that I want to live. And so I know that I want to live on the ranch. I know that I want to do this work here, but how do I make that work?
Yeah. Do you think of yourself and your family as wealthy?
With money? No. But with joy.
I put no qualifiers on that question. I just said.
I mean, I would
think of yourself as wealthy.
I think that we are. I don't want for anything. I think I am. I have goals. I have things that I'm excited about. I have projects that I want to get done. I have places that I want to work on. I have all of these ideas and thoughts, and those keep me very excited. But I definitely think that maybe part of the joy of living here is that everything, I mean, it's always greener on the other side, right? So it's always like, you know, oh, I've never had a connection with things, cars, things that would make me happy. Clothing. I just don't, that's just not something that this would lead to happiness. To me, that has never, I don't really care about those sort of things. I do really get excited about projects. And, you know, I'm working on a barn right now. And so we're taking this old, really old barn, and it's more than 100 years old. And I really want to make it a place where we can get people together and have events and feed, have big parties and get people together in this barn. Mm. So for me, it's more about like, okay, so how do I get this? How do I make this work? How do I have, how do I, but it brings me joy to be thinking about that, those, that way.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect answer. Well, one thing that's really interesting is we get so often like signifiers of wealth versus actual wealth, and even what the word means, because what you immediately pointed to was like, these are things you can't buy. Like, the, like I'm like, that's the definition of wealth. Like, I want for nothing is the definition of wealthy. Mm-hmm. So what you're pointing to in terms of wealth, the definition in my world would be like, I don't want for anything. And I'm really excited about these projects. And, but it doesn't mean what most people think of when they think of wealth. And that was sort of what I wanted to ask you about, was these, there are these signifiers of wealth in the world that, you know, we don't even know. You know, you see somebody driving a crazy expensive car and you think they must be rich. But you actually don't even know that, because it, you know, like, there's a lot of big hat, no cattle in the world.
Yes. They make some hats, right? That say that. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And so one signifier of wealth is like, you own a bunch of land, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's a social kind of signal, mm-hmm. or people have used it. People use it as a social, especially in California or the West generally. Like, I'm assuming you bump up against that every once in a while. Like, how do you feel about that? How do you deal with the idea of like, Elizabeth must be wealthy? She owns all this land.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a I think I just never try to. I, you know, there's what does my husband says it all the time. It's like, what is it? Land rich, money poor. Is that how it works? Yeah. Or something like, some sort of saying of that sort of, you know, I think, we are very, very, very lucky, to be able to live and take care of this land. I didn't buy it. I was born here and into a family, and it is something that has been part of me when I was born. I feel very lucky. We have a big family. We have lots of cousins. Everybody is involved in the ranch. And what I feel really lucky about is my family is very much on the same page. I mean, and this is more than lucky. I mean, this is just to me, that our family is on the same page to keep this land in our family and in for generations to come. That's really special. Mm-hmm. That is really special, because you're right. It life could be, I guess, easier. I don't know what my life, I mean, my life to me would be lost without this place. But I feel that I am so lucky to be part of a family that care more about this place and the history and what we have struggled, all of our struggles over generations to keep this land in our family. It's not easy. It's definitely not easy. I don't know if that's answered your question, because it's a very good question. It's a true question.
No, it's really helpful, because we get in a lot of trouble with money when it turns out it's really expensive if you don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like we get in a lot of trouble when we forget what's important to us. And I see you like physically you're because of the area, like, you know, the middle of Montana or out in the middle of Idaho, some places in Utah, it's like you're not quite like you are like in proximity to so many different identities, right? Like you go to town, and I would assume, you know, like what's it like being in an area that's now become celebrity and billionaire land, you know, and how do you remind yourself of like what's important to you? It's an interesting perspective because I talk to lots of people. I have friends that are ranchers, and but they're all out in Idaho and Wyoming, and there's problems. They're close to Jackson, and so you get a little bit of that, you know, interface, but you get a lot of it. Is it a thing for you? Do you have to remind yourself? Do you ever? And the answer may be, bro, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm fixing fences.
No. Oh, no. I mean, I get what you're saying. I just don't think there's something. I just feel maybe this is just not that interesting either, but like, I think people know how special this place is. And I think that I know how special this place is. So for me, like, I'm so lucky. Like, I'm so lucky. I would almost say the opposite. Like, for me, I almost say the opposite, whereas I feel like I'm so lucky, I should be quiet and go about my business, because I was lucky enough to be able to be brought up here, know how amazing this place is, and that is worth more than anything.
Yeah.
And it's not, no, I totally understand. There's all of these, you know, I mean, the joke, Austin, my husband, he's always like, I just think, you know, I could marry one person with 1 acre and it would be great. I'd like have that place mowed and man, this place would be amazing. And then we might have a pool. Right, how cool would that be? You know, we don't have those things. Like, it's like, that sounds lovely, you know, but it's also, it's funny because he also, I mean, he could never, we could, you know, it's just, this is pretty, it's a pretty special place.
Yeah. It's just interesting to me that you've become, so aware of, independent of the place, it's just so aware of what's important to you that it's easy to go back to that. Like, I think that's really, really that, like, I call that a statement of financial purpose. Mm. It's just like a sentence or two. And mine is time with my family, mainly outside. Mm-hmm. And so anytime I get tempted to do crazy things, you know, because I see them on Instagram, mm-hmm. I can kind of remind myself of like, oh, that's right. I've got it written down here. It's like, is that going to help me have more time with my family, mm-hmm. mainly outside and mm-hmm. serve in my community, in my church? No. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well then I don't need to, but it's really, it turns out if you don't know who you are, mm-hmm. that can be a very expensive proposition because you're constantly trying to keep up with all these other things. And we all like to joke that peer pressure was for kids, but I mean, adults are really, really bad at this. Like, it's just more insidious, right? Like, we don't really realize you know, that truck's pretty nice. Mm-hmm. You know, right. if they can afford that truck, why don't I, you know, I, you know, and then it like slips in.
Right. Yeah. No, I think, I mean, even when I started my business and, you know, I was going to farmers markets or even just having people to the ranch when I do these events, I saw other people doing things. And they all had shirts and everyone had matching shirts and they all, you know, with their logos on it and t-shirts and sweaters and all of this hats and all of these things. And when I first started out, like, I couldn't afford to do that.
T-shirts and hats.
T-shirts, right. You know, but I'm like, man, they look official. Like, and they look like they're really running a real business. Like, to me, that looks real. Right. And it was really insecure. I was really insecure when I first started my business because I couldn't afford anything extra when I first started. You know, I hadn't written it into the business plan for my t-shirts and my shirts. And I was, and I would go to things and I would see others and I would think to myself, now they have it together.
Right.
And it was very scary for me.
Huh.
But again, you know, raising my two boys, reading a lot of these old fables and a lot of these old stories that are super simple, but really have a purpose, actually probably really helped me, because just like the tortoise and the hare, you know, people are running to the, you know, buying everything. They have great trucks. They have logos on their trucks. You know, it's like they have all of this stuff that to me, you look at them and you go, these people have a business. Now that's a business,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then there was me, you know, driving around in my old truck, you know, like talking to people, talking to chefs, talking to, you know, going to farmers markets. And I still feel like I did it the right way. Now I look back and I go, it's okay, Elizabeth. It's okay. Like, I still have anxiety. Like my heart is pounding because that feeling of really showing up at places and feeling like I wasn't, I didn't have a shirt that said what I do.
Like now your heart is pounding when you think
yeah.
about it.
Now my heart is pounding by just feeling how I felt then.
Do you like, could you just do me a favor? Like describe to me how that feels. Like how would you describe the physical sensation?
Of like that moment of showing up at yeah. those places and not feeling.
Just a second ago.
Oh, it just feels, it's very, I think it feels lonely and scary and lonely.
It's so interesting. Like so often people think a conversation about money is going to be about calculators and spreadsheets. And we end up at this place all the time, like lonely and scary or exciting. And it's what wakes me up in the morning. Like you were all fired up about projects, right? Like I'm excited about, we can go from fired up about projects tangentially related to money. Right. And we can go to lonely and scary in 17 minutes. All of it apparently during a conversation about money. And that's mm-hmm. just, it's amazing to me. That's what we're trying to do, Elizabeth, with this show, is actually get people to realize like this isn't about spreadsheets and calculators.
Right.
Right. It's about how we feel. It's about how we relate to one another. It's how, about showing up at the farmer's market in the old truck, seeing all the other people and feeling like anxious, scared, and lonely. That's amazing.
It wasn't amazing at the time.
No, and it's not amazing even now, but it's just amazing that, like by amazing, I mean, it's so interesting to me that that's what we're really talking about when we talk about this thing called money.
100%.
Well, as we sort of wind down here, how would you define, if you had to define enough, how would you define enough?
Well, I feel like I wake up every day thinking that I don't want to say it's never, look at you, these questions, my goodness. No, they're great. I just think, because there is something that's important, I feel, to have this want for life that's never enough. Not in a negative sense. You know, I see like there's that excitement every day mm. about living and doing and creating and having joy and fun doing it. So in a way it's like, it's never enough because I keep wanting to go and I keep having ideas and thoughts. But I think wanting more is also, I think it's really, it's great. It's great. It like keeps me alive. It's like great. I I feel very much, I mean, I'm still working on my business. I still don't know all the answers. I am still figuring it all out. And I still have dreams, big, big dreams and things that I want to do. But I feel joy when I go to sleep and I feel joy when I wake up. And maybe that's enough.
Yeah. I feel joy when I go to sleep and I feel joy when I wake up. That's amazing. Well, Elizabeth, just one last question I can't help but ask. How old is your youngest?
Nine.
So let's just pretend 20 years from now, we're still doing the show. It's turned into a TV show. We come and we're filming it on the ranch.
Very exciting.
And we ask your youngest, you know, what about his relationship with money? And we specifically ask, like, what do you hope your youngest would say to me about his relationship with money 20 years from now?
I would say that I want him to love his life. Mm. I want him to find work that really fills him and joy. That would be for me. I would want that relationship to money. More importantly, that he was living the life that he really wanted to live.
So good. There's this Lao Tzu quote that's been following me around for a decade, almost every day. The thing bothers me, like, it's just, and it's be who you really are and go the whole way.
I love that.
Right. And like, what a practice that is to, like, even figure, like, what does it even mean? Like, what do you mean who I really am? And then once I figure, how do I go the whole way? And I think pointing to that, could there be anything more beautiful for your children to think, like, man, I hope that money just plays a role in allowing that to happen.
Right.
Like, if it's going to play a role, hope it's just like the whole role is a life that you really love.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, thank you.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for having me. This is a real honor to be here.
One of the things I've really been trying to do with these conversations is to get as close as I could to a beautiful, intimate discussion around a fire. I've had so many of those over my life. They've changed me in really meaningful ways. And one of the reasons I believe they've had that impact on me, these discussions around fires, is because of the space, the time to pause, time to process with a friend verbally, the ability to feel your way around a topic that might have been unapproachable because there'd never been a safe place to talk about it. And I loved this conversation with Elizabeth because of those reasons. She had a sense of spaciousness, and that could come from spending lots of time on long walks around a large piece of property. And what was interesting to me was this kind of continual return to the things that mattered to her. Now, it's really important to realize this does not require 13,000 acres in Santa Barbara, right? It doesn't require ranching. It's not about ranching. It's not about land. It's not about agriculture. It's about getting clear about what's important to each of us, right? We can do the same thing in a park near your home or a coffee shop with a friend or an intimate dinner party at your house, or walking through an art gallery. So it's not about the ranch. It's about this idea of returning back to the things that are important to us. And one of the challenges with that has always been taking the time to be intentional about thinking about that. Like, what does money mean in your life? There's this great David White quote, the Irish poet, in his book, Consolations. He's got an essay called Courage. And he says, only slowly do we learn what we really care about and allow our outer lives to be realigned with that gravitational pull. And I think that's what I took away from this conversation with Elizabeth, is she's become pretty clear about what she really cares about, and she's still feeling around. trying to figure that out, trying to be clear about it, and allowing her life to be more aligned, as David White says, with the gravitational pull of what's important to her. So I'm always hesitant to share tactical advice. I don't think of this podcast as a self-help podcast. I think of it as an adventure journal. But it might be helpful here, right? What could we pull out from this conversation with Elizabeth? You know, number one, space. The physical space you're in could have an impact on having a meaningful conversation about money. Number two, time. Like, give yourself time. So it could be as simple as meeting at the coffee shop for an hour, or having some friends over for dinner, or finding a time to go on a walk with your partner or spouse, or your kids or a good friend. So space and time. And then number three, give yourself permission to be clumsy. So maybe this weekend, try to find the space and the time to have another conversation about money, because I know I will. And next week, we'll be back together for another conversation about money and meaning at 50 Fires. 50 Fires is a production of Blind Nil Audio in association with The Roost. If you find this show valuable, and I sure hope you do, please share it with a friend and leave a 6 or 7 or maybe even 8-star review over on Apple Podcasts. It's crazy how much that helps the show get introduced to more people. Speaking of more people, I have a goal that we can use 50 Fires as a spark to start 1 million conversations a month about money. I've heard from so many of you about the conversations you're having around the dinner table, on a road trip in the car, or at your favorite coffee shop, and I think we need more. So if you've got a friend or a family member that you think would benefit from having a conversation about money, or if you happen to give advice for a living, we've created a whole set of free resources. Think of it as a book club about money. It's over at 50fires.com, and you can use it every week. We're updating it every week so that you can help me start 1 million conversations a month about money. I'm looking forward to our next conversation around the fire. Cheers, my friends.
The views, information, or opinions expressed in this series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Chip and Joanna Gaines, Blind Nil Audio, nor Magnolia.